Okay, welcome. My name is Divine. This is episode 329 of the Divine Intervention Podcasts. And in this podcast, I'll be talking about dealing with transitions in medicine. Dealing with transitions in medicine. This is not a knowledge podcast, but this is more of a life podcast. This is something that is particularly important for people that are in healthcare. And again, as I do at the, as a reminder, if you're taking step 2 CK or step 3 anytime soon, I do have a review course that's taking place this week on Friday and Saturday. It's 10 hours each day. And we'll be going over medicine, ped, surgery, OB-GYN, psych, neuro, biostats, ethics, professionalism, communications, and many of those healthcare systems topics. And a lot of ethics as well, and biostats, as I said. And then on Thursday, between 2 and 4:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, which is 5 to 7:30 p.m. Eastern, I'll be doing the MBME Test Taking Strategies class. Again, I've had many people attend these courses and do really well. Like, they start doing better on their practice exams, they do better on their real exams and things of that nature. I get emails all the time from people that have participated. So if you're interested, just shoot me an email and I'll give you some more information on cost. The course is going to be held over Zoom. Okay, so let's jump into dealing with transitions, right? So I know some of you may be like, Divine, this topic is a little weird. This is kind of like a big break from the norm. Just think of this as a big life lessons podcast. But this is a life lesson that actually has pretty major implications for your life. Because the thing is, medicine, we many times don't discuss mental health. We many times don't discuss things that can really, really bring down your mind. Things that can really, really get you in the wrong direction, right? Because medicine, especially in this country, especially in the US, is a high stakes endeavor. What do I mean by high stakes? Pretty much everything in, I feel like, don't get me wrong, you know, medicine is a pretty great career and everything. But I feel that the way it's handled in the US, it makes it almost like I just feel like everything is set up to be harder than it needs to be. One thing people don't realize is that you can make pretty great doctors, pretty great physicians, pretty great healthcare professionals by just going through a clean, more humane process. Let me put it that way. But I feel that in the US, the common belief and common thought is we're going to make this as hard as possible. We're going to make this as high stress as possible. We're going to make this as intense as possible. We're doing this to draw the best in you, even if in many cases it actually draws out the worst in people. But I think being able to manage those things is very important. So, because to be honest with you, I was discussing this with someone recently, but I've always desired to make a podcast where I just address this issue and just give you some practical tips on how to deal with these problems so that it doesn't consume you. Because I feel that you will think that when people are pursuing a dream, when people are pursuing a career goal, the first thing on their minds will be like, wow, this is how much I want to help people. This is how much I want to do this. This is how much I want to do that. But the thing is, at the end of the day, the practice of medicine in the US becomes a journey of, can I stay afloat? Again, I know that I'm not alone in this. I know that many people, I mean, like, it batters my heart every day when I read posts on Reddit of people where you're like, wow, I won't be surprised if this person has suicidal ideation or this person wants to end it all. I mean, one of the most common causes of death in residents, believe it or not, is suicide, right? I mean, I heard recently of like 3 residents from the same hospital. I'm obviously going to mention any hospital's name, but 3 residents from the same hospital where all of them committed suicide, right? That's abysmal, right? Or you see in certain states of the U.S., practicing medicine in those states is almost like not advisable in a sense, because you see how many people just pass away from stress, from just different factors that are in play that put them in those delirious circumstances, right? So I'm just going to talk about 10 points today. Again, like, I'm not even going to be able to completely scratch the surface of this problem, but I'm just going to give you some tips from my perspective that I feel have helped. Because definitely I will tell you this, in my time as a physician, I've absolutely had situations in my life where I just felt completely smoked, right? Where I just felt like, wow, how do I keep going? Like, what is going on here? Wow, I feel like I'm drowning. There is a lot going on. I don't know what to do, right? But I was thankfully, with the help of God and again, many other resources, able to come out on the other side with my head on my shoulders. So I would, and not just with my head on my shoulders, but actually thriving in medicine. So the thing is, you can thrive. I think that's one big thing I want to say. You can thrive, you can rise above, right? But again, I'm not going to give you like some feel good, whatever. No, I'm going to be straight with you here and tell you what the truth really is. So you can have just that true perspective and adjust your behaviors and your life accordingly, right? So what's the first point I really want to make? The first point I really want to make is a transition. I mean, some of you may wonder, oh, Divine, what is a transition? Well, the thing is, a transition is a high-risk period of life. It's a period of change, right? And the thing is, change for some people can be very distressing. Very, very distressing. And, you know, sometimes the degree of change determines how distressing it could be, right? There are certain changes that are pretty minor, like, oh, your salary went from $10 an hour to $9.90 an hour. Okay, psh. Yeah, will that affect your quality of life a little? Yeah, but is it the end of the world? Probably not, right? But transitions are periods of change. But the thing is, in medicine is a tough discipline in a sense, because the transitions tend to be pretty intense. They tend to be pretty like you're going from 0 to 1 million very quickly. I mean, we hear many times when you get into med school, it's like drinking water from a fire hydrant. Literally, that's a pretty apt description of many of the transitions that people make. And the thing is, when you make a transition in life, you can have one of two outcomes, right? You can thrive through that transition. Alternatively, you can be consumed by that transition, right? So that's the one point I want to make. I just want to establish what a transition is. Now, the second point I want to make is, what are some examples of transitions, right? What are some examples of transitions? Again, I know a lot of the people listening to this podcast are people in healthcare, right? People that are medical students, right? So what are some transitions? Well, if you're a person in medicine, one big transition for you was going from college to med school, right? You go from learning information in 1 month that you may have learned in like one or two semesters of college easily, right? Like a microbiology course, we are learning about tons of bugs, their presentations, their staining, their identification. I mean, like literally the stuff I learned as a med student at Johns Hopkins, like in my first 7 weeks, was probably about as much information as I'd learned easily in a 16, 20 credit hour semester as a college student, probably even more, right? I mean, we learned a ton in anatomy. It was a ton of information. I mean, the head and neck, muscles, nerves, insertions, all those things, right? So the thing is, that's one big transition, going from college to med school. Another classic transition is when you're taking the USMLE exams, right? The first big one is that USMLE step one exam. Thankfully, I'm kind of glad it's going to pass fail, although that also kind of introduces some challenges for certain subsets of medical students. But and, you know, I've talked about that in prior podcasts, but taking the USMLE exams, right? You're going from, you've probably never taken an exam this long in your life to a situation where you're going to be sitting down for 8 hours, as in the case of step one, you know, 7 hours plus the 1 hour break, or 9 hours as in step two CK, right? 8 hours plus the 1 hour break, right? Or step three, where you take it over 2 days, right? So again, it's just the medical system in this country, just high stakes, taking the USMLE exams. Again, I feel like there are really good ways to assess a physician's ability and to entrench the abilities you want without putting people through the grinder in certain ways. But again, that's a topic for a different podcast. That's not my main goal today, right? But taking the USMLE exams is a big transition for many people. Going from preclinical years to third year rotations is a big transition, because now you no longer have control over your schedule, right? You can't wake up whenever you want. You wake up at a set time. You have to be in a hospital at a set time. You're working with people that may like you or may not like you. You're working with people who you have to impress, because your grades in third year are determined by some grade. If a person was really angry with you for like 5 minutes during a rotation, that may be the thing that may completely destroy your grade in a rotation, right? And again, they will say, oh, we're making the grading system fair and objective, blah, 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 right? But we all know that that's not necessarily true, right? There are many times you work your hardest on a rotation and then everything is just riding on the feelings of one individual, right? And this is not just something that happens in the third year of med school or the fourth year of med school. It also happens in residency, right? If and many times people end up getting, yes, there are some times where people get good evals because they are just objectively good at their job. But there are also many times in a disproportionate number of cases where people get good evals just because the attending likes them. Not because of the fact that they may necessarily be more skilled than another person. They may just be a person that is very good at getting in people's good graces, right? But the thing is, at the end of the day, getting in people's good graces is not what makes a good physician. It's one component, but I would argue that a very big component is also just being competent at your job, right? And having like a certain work ethic. So that transition, right, from preclinical years where most of your grades are objective, you study hard, you do well, to something where, oh, yes, there are your shelf exams, but wow, gee, like 60% of your grade is determined by some person's feelings about you, right? Again, that's a big transition for people. Or is it even the transition of starting residency? I'm telling you, starting residency is probably one of the biggest transitions of all the transitions you will ever make as a person that is being trained through the medical system in the US. Because again, you're getting into a place where you have a lot of responsibility, where you're expected to be more independent, where you're literally just thrown up on the deep end from the get-go, right? So the thing is, thankfully, there are some programs that are just residency programs that are better than others at helping people adjust to those transitions. But many residency programs, unfortunately, don't do it in the best way possible. So these are all examples of transitions that people face as they go through medicine. Right. So now what's the third point I want to make? The first tool. So now I'm going practical. What are some tools you can use to deal with these transitions? The very first tool in dealing with transitions is perspective. It's very, very, very important to have a good perspective on life. Right. Have a good perspective on residency training. Right. The thing is, having the right perspective can make a profound difference in a person's life. You may be surprised that two people, they may face the exact same situation of life, but one person comes out on top, the other person comes out at the bottom, just because of the way they process those circumstances, the way they adjusted to those circumstances, right? Because think about it, for example, there are people that, oh, they don't match at their number one choice. So they notice all of a sudden that they are in residency programs where they really don't want to be, right? Or they're in locations where they don't want to be. Or they're in long distance relationships. They were like thinking that, oh, you know what? If I match here, I will be able to be closer to my spouse. But those expectations go unfulfilled. The thing is, in the midst of those tough circumstances, I will encourage you to still keep a good perspective, right? The thing is, if your mindset is that, oh, wow, residency will be the death of XYZ person, right? If, again, notice I'm not even saying it to myself. No, the thing is, I have a very strong belief in the power of your words and the power of your thoughts concerning yourself. So I try my very best to not make careless statements about myself or think careless thoughts about myself. Because the thing is, there's a part of the Bible that says, as a man thinks in his heart, so he is. Right? And even there's a part of the Bible that says that death and life are in the power of the tongue. And people that love it, they will eat its fruit. So the thing is, perspective many times just has to deal with your thoughts concerning yourself. Just has to deal with your words concerning yourself, right? Like, for example, I see on forums and people will use certain terms to refer to themselves while they're in their dedicated periods. They'll put like FML. Again, I'm not going to say what FML means, but that's not a good thing to say about yourself, right? You're a human being with a brain that works great, a heart that works great, a GI tract that works great. You're a wonderful person, right? Even if, oh, you're obese or people don't like you, no. But have some pride in yourself. Really, sometimes some people need to work on their self-esteem. Have pride in yourself that, you know what, I'm a great person. I'm a good person. Even if I'm in a less than ideal situation, it doesn't change who I am. It doesn't change how wonderful I am. It doesn't change the fact that I can make a difference in a person's life. Right. So again, it's very important to have the right perspective. Right. Have that perspective that all will be well. Have that perspective that, you know what, this tough circumstance I may be going through now is just a stepping stone to my destiny, is a stepping stone to my destination. Right. Have that mindset that, you know what, this tough circumstance will pass. This too shall pass. That's it's a very profound four words. Right. This too shall pass. have that perspective, right? There was this part of the Bible that I've read back in the, I've actually read a couple of times, right? About a Shunammite woman. Literally, her son had just died. Her son had literally just died, right? In fact, if you want more perspective on this, I'll encourage you to look at 2 Kings chapter 4, verse 23. If you're a person that reads the Bible, 2 Kings 4, verse 23, right? But this woman's son had literally just died. And what did this woman say? This woman said, they asked her, oh, what's going on? She said, all will be well. Right. In fact, I really love the song that says, it is well with my soul, it is well with my soul. Right. Just assuring yourself. The thing is, even if the circumstances around you are not good, tell yourself that everything is good. Think in your heart that everything is good. Because if you keep having those positive thoughts, speak those positive words, have that positive perspective, you'll begin to see that almost like a creative force will arise within you where you will start taking steps to work yourself out of that terrible situation, right? So have a good perspective. A good perspective can really, really fuel a person's faith, right? Can really, really fuel a person's faith, right? So again, tell yourself that it's not the circumstances around me that matter. It's my perspective on those circumstances that makes a big difference. Now, what is the fourth point I want to make? The fourth point I want to make is the importance of gaining control of your mind. Right? Gain control of your mind. Gain control of your mind. I'm telling you this. If you win the battle of your mind, you can pretty much win any other battle in your life. Right? Most times, it's not the external enemies that end up destroying a person. No. It's those internal enemies of fears, of doubts, of unbelief that ends up crushing those people. Right? So you see, certain people's spirits are broken. Right? The thing is, if a person's spirit has been broken, then it's going to be very hard for them to engage with life on a productive level. So gain control of your mind. Watch your thoughts, right? The thing is, thinking good thoughts is not a passive process. Thinking good thoughts is an active process. You need to decide in your heart. I like the book of Daniel that says, oh, Daniel proposed in his heart, right? You need to settle that battle in your heart first before the life that surrounds you will go well. So I will strongly encourage you, watch your thoughts. Watch the inputs that you're getting into your life, right? Watch the shows, right? Don't be hanging out with those Debbie Downers, those people that are like, wow, residency is so tough. Oh, residency is going to be the end of XYZ. Oh, residency, I don't think I can survive this. No, if you keep hanging out with those people, then that will be your perspective on life. Even a part of the Bible says, he that walks with the wise will become wise, right? And then the Bible also says evil communication, right? That's interaction with people, corrupts good manners, right? So the thing is, gain control of your mind. Watch what you watch, right? What are you feeding your mind with? The thing is, if you feed your mind with garbage, then your life will be garbage. But if you feed your mind with good stuff, then your life will have good stuff, right? So gain control of your mind. Don't permit bad conversation. Don't permit bad thoughts. Consciously make that decision that you will think good thoughts, that you will pull down those strongholds of negative thoughts and you will replace them actively with good thoughts. Read wholesome material, things that will encourage you, things that will beef up your spirit, things that will build your faith. That's very important. Now, what's the fifth point that I want to make? The fifth point I want to make is simplification. 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 That is one great way to deal with transitions. Simplification. The thing is, when you start a transition, right, it's something new to you. It's not something that you're particularly experienced with. It's something that you're trying to thrive through. It's something that you're trying to overcome. So the thing is, when you get into a new transition, since you're still trying to figure things out, try to limit your other responsibilities. Cut away things from your life that are low yield. Right? The thing is, I want you to stop adding too much water to your river so you can stay afloat. Right? The thing is, when you get into a new transition, it's almost like you're diving into a river. Right? You've not mastered that river yet. But when you keep taking on more and more and more responsibilities, it's almost like you're increasing the depth of that river. If you keep increasing that depth, then you will sink and you don't want to sink. Right? So while you're still trying to get your feet under you, limit your responsibilities. Right? Because you see some people, they get into medical school or they're transitioning to third year or they are starting residency and they want to be the exact same people that they were before they started those things. It's kind of hard to be able to do that. Because think about it. Say, for example, you join the army. You can't have the same lifestyle you had before you joined the army. The army literally will purge you of certain habits, of certain just loyal things you do that may not be very profitable for you long term, right? So I will encourage you, simplify your life. Simplify your life, right? Whether you like it or not, transitions, they're busy. So you can't live exactly the way you lived before when you had fewer commitments, right? So I'm not saying you should not relax. You should relax, right? You should hang out with people. You should have fun. But the thing is, be select. Just try to be more high yield. Because the thing is, if you don't overload yourself, then you can have time to rest. You can have time to reset. You can have time to reprogram your mind so that you have the right perspective on life. Now, what is the sixth point I want to make? The sixth point I want to make about dealing with transitions is organization. Organization, 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 right? There is nothing like being organized. There's nothing like being a good planner, right? There's nothing like having an almost like robotic approach to transitions, right? The thing is, it's very important to have a plan and to structure your day-to-day tasks, right? So that you can get them done in an effective fashion. One of the most effective ways, one of the best ways of dealing with chaos and difficult tasks is standardization. In fact, this is almost like a quality improvement principle, right? The thing is, what do I mean by this? What I mean by this is pretty much take your most common tasks of life and try to have like an algorithm for it. Try to have like a checklist for it. Try to have like a protocol for it, right? The thing is, even hospitals have caught on to this, right? Hospitals have caught on to this because they're like, you know what? Wow, there are many ways something can go wrong in the management of a DKA patient. So how about we do this? Why don't we go ahead and create a protocol, create an order set, create an algorithm that is used whenever we have any DKA patient. So when that chaos comes in, you know how to deal with it. It's not like something that is completely foreign to you, right? So start from your most common tasks and then work your way to your least common tasks, right? You can take the fear out of many scary things in life if you can reduce that thing to a checklist, right? Because think about it, flying a plane, I'm sure it must be like a gut-wrenching experience, especially for a new pilot. But that is why they have checklists. You follow the checklists, it's almost like you are plugging and playing. You will get good results. You will get a safe flight at the end of things, right? In fact, in ICU settings, this concept of organization, of planning, of standardization is used a lot, right? In fact, I tell you, in my personal life, I use this a lot, right? In my teaching, I use this a lot. Because you see, one of the biggest components of students not doing well on exams is just a lot of test-taking anxiety, a lot of test-taking fear, right? So the thing is, if you can suck the emotion out of those processes and make it a standardized process where it doesn't seem like something nebulous, but it seems like something where, you know what? Oh, wow. If I just do ABC every single time with every single question, I will get a good result, or I will give myself the best chances of getting a good result. Then many times that thing almost like cures a person's test-taking anxiety, right? So I will encourage you, be standardized. Because I remember like when I did my first ICU rotation as an intern, it was really scary because it was an ICU where we dealt with many different kinds of patients, like surgical patients, cardiac patients, patients that had just really, really bad problems, right? And I saw how overwhelming the work would be. So what did I do? Literally my first 3, 4, 5 days, I came up with checklists for how I write my notes, checklists for how I round, checklists for how I pre-round, checklists for how I had, basically like most tasks, most of my common tasks that I knew that I had to do well and do with high fidelity for extended periods of time, pretty much every day, I created my own checklist for them. And I fine-tuned those checklists as time came along. And once I had checklists for everything, then I was like, oh, Divine, you're going to be a good master in this ICU. Doesn't matter what happens. You have a checklist. Just follow your checklist and you'll be good, right? So build a good checklist, right? Look, and the way to build a checklist is look at someone that has basically overcome successfully, right? Successfully overcome what you're about to go through, right? And then take those things they did and break it up into a series of tasks. Make it as thorough as possible and use it consistently and you will get very good results from it, right? I mean, like when I do like my MBME test-taking strategies class, that's literally what I'm doing with people. I'm just teaching them organized approaches to going through questions so that they don't feel like, wow, the MBME is trying to get me. Oh no, this is going to go poorly, blah, 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 blah. No, you don't have to be in those situations if you're organized, right? If you're organized. It's almost like, the thing is, whenever you're organized, whenever you make a checklist for things, it's almost like you're making a study guide for your life. You're making a study guide for that task, right? So that's very important. I'm telling you, when you have rules, when you have structure, when you have checklists, it helps a lot. There's this show that I watch a lot, 9911, right? For those of you that are looking for something great to watch that is relatively wholesome, it's actually a pretty good show, right? The thing is, many times when you see a dysfunctional home, a dysfunctional family, it's a home where there are no rules. Most times, if you want to boil down what these nannies that come and intervene in these homes, these dysfunctional homes, if you want to boil down what they do to one principle, is that they bring in some structure, some rules, and some organization. And once you get buy-in into those rules by every member of the family, including the parents, you see that that family just takes a complete 360 turn for the better. That's why it's very important, structure, organization, and rules. If there's anything I've said today, this is probably one of the most important principles that I've discussed. Now, the seventh point I want to discuss is, it's very important in dealing with transitions to have a wholesome anchor. To have a wholesome anchor, right? The thing is, the fact that I'm saying wholesome anchor, that means there must be unwholesome anchors, right? You see some people, their anchor for dealing with transitions is alcoholism, right? Or is the use of drugs and things like that. Again, those things are not very wholesome. Guess what? Because they just mask the problem. They don't deal with the underlying pathophysiology of the problem, right? It's almost like memorizing factoids, but you don't understand the factoid behind what, you don't understand the thought or the reasoning behind that thing you are memorizing, right? It's very important to find wholesome anchors. Again, and there are many different kinds of wholesome anchors. For me, again, many of you even just knowing the website Divine Intervention Podcast, right? You can tell I'm a Christian. For me, my anchor is God. My anchor is my faith. Right? I really keen to my faith. I try as much as possible to be involved in church, to go to church, to do my personal devotion every day, to read my Bible every day. Because the thing is, it keeps me grounded. It keeps me on solid footing as I navigate many of these transitions of life, right? Really helps with keeping me grounded. Another thing that also helps is just my family. Another thing that helps are my mentors. I have many good mentors, right? So the thing is, don't cut off, like, the thing is, when people are going through a transition, they feel like their life is being swayed from one direction to the other. So the thing is, one of the best ways to not drown or sink whenever you're going through a stormy time is to have an anchor, right? So I'll encourage you, even before you start this transition, define what that anchor is and stick with it, right? Those things will keep you going through the tough times and the tough situations of life. Now, the eighth point I want to make is the importance of keeping calm, even in the midst of chaos. Keeping calm, even in the midst of chaos. The thing is, again, deciding to be calm is not a passive process. Deciding to be calm is an active process. Because the thing is, when you go through scary situations of life, if you can tell yourself, calm down, literally repeat it in your mind over and over again, calm down. I have a quiet spirit. I'm going to calm down. Many times you notice that you then begin to see situations for what they really are, and then you begin to have constructive, creative responses to those situations, right? Like, for example, I remember, again, my ICU experience as an intern is very enlightening here, right? I remember the first time I had to do, like, central lines, or, I mean, I'd intubated in med school, but getting to, like, intubate a human being in a trauma situation, in an emergent situation, or doing like ACLS, right? Like when I had to, again, resuscitate a dead patient and things like that. These things, when you look at my face, you don't see me like, oh! You don't see like, no. Even if my heart may be racing, I'm telling myself in those moments, Divine, calm down. Divine, just be calm, be quiet on the inside. Everything will be okay. All will be well. And I notice whenever I do that, it's almost like that situation slows down to my own speed. I don't feel like I'm trying to catch up with that situation. I feel like that situation is slowing down for me. And once your mind perceives the situation as being slowed down, then your mind begins to get constructive. And you notice that you start doing amazing things quickly, even if in your mind it seems slow to you, right? So it's very, very, very important. That was actually one comment I got from quite a number of people that worked with me as an intern, or I worked with as an intern. They were like, Divine, your face always just exudes a lot of calm and calmness in these court situations or these terrible situations where everyone is running like something terrible is happening. Obviously, something terrible is happening, right? But again, I want you to convince yourself that you have control. You have control over that circumstance. You can stand strong in that circumstance. That circumstance will not consume you.
right? It's not the circumstance that, this is literally one thing I tell people, like, tutor one-on-one. It's not the kind of exam the MBME throws at you that makes the difference. It's the individual taking that exam that makes the difference, right? So the thing is, if you have that perspective, again, it can really, really help you in life. Now, the ninth point I want to make, again, I'm almost done here, is to keep your head down, right? Don't be loud. Again, just tell yourself, these are the things I want to do. This is my checklist. These are the principles I want to follow. And just stick with them. Just keep your head down. Don't be loud. You see, some people, they want to make waves from the get-go with a transition. No, you don't have to be that person. Why don't you be the person that is a discreet champion, right? The thing is, when you're a champion, people will recognize you. You don't have to be the one tooting your own horn. So that's one thing I will say. Like, many people that get into residency or that get into like third-year rotations, they don't keep their head down. They want to be loud. They want to be the populist person. They want to be the loud voice. But the thing is, there's this saying that empty barrels make the most noise, right? Empty barrels make the most noise, right? But people that are full, people that are actually doing great stuff, they don't make noise about it. So I will encourage you, just keep your head down. You don't have to be involved in every single thing. You don't have to bring in your thoughts and your final word on everything. No, keep your head down. You don't have to control every conversation. Keep your head down. Now, the final thing I want to say is to seek help in the right places, right? So the thing is, at the end of the day, there are some transitions that are just too overwhelming that people cannot handle on their own. You need help. Find help in those circumstances. And the thing I will encourage you, because many times, don't wait until you get to a crisis situation to have a plan of attack for that crisis. No. Think about it. When people do Alcoholics Anonymous or Narcotics Anonymous or whatever, one of the cornerstones of therapy is that you talk about a crisis situation and you have a plan in place. You have a sponsor. You have someone that you're like, oh, even if I'm not presently going through a crisis situation, if I were to go into that crisis situation, I know exactly what I need to do, right? So the thing is, before you get into these transitions, have a plan. Oh, if I start feeling like I want to hurt myself, or I want to kill myself, or I feel like life is over, this is who I will call. This is what I will do. This is how I will extract myself from the situation. Have those plans in place. The thing is, depending on the tradition of like your, if you're, for example, like a resident, depending on the transition of your residency program may actually not be the best place to get this kind of help, right? So if it gets really bad, if it gets to that really bad point where you're like, oh man, I'm going to commit suicide, I'm going to end my life, speak to someone trustworthy, right? Call the National Suicide Hotline. There are people on ground that are able and willing to help you, right? The thing is, if you need to take a leave of absence from work and spend some time with your family, do that. Do that. Again, remember, it is a person that is alive that can practice medicine. Again, the current setup of many things in medical education is to almost like induce mental health crises in healthcare practitioners, right? Remember, there is a lot to life. There's a lot more to life than the practice of medicine. I will tell you that, right? There's a lot more to life than the practice of medicine. Medicine is a calling. But sometimes many people, especially people in authority positions in medicine, right? They use this thing, oh, medicine is a calling, to begin to abuse participants in healthcare, right? So again, remember, keep your priorities straight. Everyone has different priorities in their life. But I will tell you this. Do you know what my priorities are? Number one, my number one priority in life is my faith. That is the number one thing to me. It matters more to me than anything else in my life. Number two is my family. Guess what? These are my top two things. Medicine is not one of it, right? One is my faith. Two is my family. And then the third on that list is my career. My career does not come over my faith. It does not come over my family, right? So again, it's very important to have the right priorities. Whether you like it or not, you're not going to be able to practice medicine forever. At some point, you will stop practicing medicine. You will stop practicing medicine. What is left off after that? You see some people, after they stop practicing medicine, then it's almost like their lives are over. No, it shouldn't be so. You should have the right priorities for your life. Again, your mileage may vary with some of these things I'm saying, but I'm just saying things based on my perspective and what I think personally for myself makes the most sense, right? Because many times in the US, it's almost like a badge of honor for you to be worked to the bone. right? The thing is, we're a profession that is supposed to be healing other people. But what we're actually doing is we're pretty much killing our own. Because we really, like, I really hope that at some point, major reforms are made in this country in, like, medical education and medical training. Because we have pretty much come to, like, normalize just being worked to your breaking point, being worked to the bone, right? Because think about it. We have said that, oh, you know what? An 80-hour work week is normal. We have normalized an 80-hour work week. But let me tell you this. An 80-hour work week, there is nothing that is normal about an 80-hour work week, right? The thing is, there are many countries in this world where their healthcare systems are far better than what obtains in the U.S., right? Far, far better than what obtains in the U.S. And guess what? They don't work 80, their physicians don't work 80-hour weeks, right? Their physicians may work like, oh, 40, 48-hour, 50-hour weeks, right? Again, some of you may be like, oh, Divine, are you trying to promote laziness here? No, I'm not promoting laziness. I promise you, for those of you that listen to my podcast and stuff, I work really, really hard. I don't lazy about every... No. Most days, I am up by 5 a.m. and I go to bed relatively late at night. So I work pretty hard. I will tell you that. I work really, really hard, right? But the thing is, again, there's just more to life than the practice of medicine. So I will just tell you this. Prioritize yourself and your mental well-being, right? The thing is, the Bible says, love your neighbor as you love yourself. The Bible did not say, love your neighbor more than you love yourself. So it's very, very important. Again, this is a topic that I'm extremely passionate about because I know that this is something that really, really, really affects many people in healthcare, more people than are willing to admit to it. So hopefully you found this podcast to be helpful. And I will encourage you again, if you're going through these transitions, have a plan, take the right steps, and all will be well with you. So as I do at the end of every podcast, I do offer one-on-one tutoring for many exams. Step 1, Step 2 CK, Step 3, preclinical med school exams, third-year shelf exams. And then I also help with ERAS applications. Again, I've worked with many people that have applied to many competitive residency programs that are now currently residents. In fact, some people I've worked with are actually either graduating or have graduated from residency. And then I also have this website, divineinterventionpodcast.com. If you go there and subscribe, you'll get an email notification whenever I make a new podcast. And then I also have these podcasts on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Spotify, at least the most recent 150 episodes. If you want everything from episode 1, then you want to make sure you go on the website. You'll always find those things there. Basically, it's a WordPress role. I can't really put more than the most recent 150 podcasts on these podcast apps that exist. And then I also have a YouTube channel, Divine Intervention USMLE Podcasts and Videos. It's basically a channel where I put all the videos that I make. Again, please subscribe to that. Every little bit of support definitely helps. And then I also have this website, divineinterventionlifelessons.com. In fact, because I've gotten tons and tons and tons of emails from people that have listened to many of my life lessons. And many people have said, oh, wow, Divine, I found this to be really helpful. It has helped me a ton. So I started a podcast. I call it Divine Intervention Life Lessons. I believe right now I have like maybe eight podcasts or thereabouts, 8 or 9. I make a couple every week. And I'm going to start being more aggressive about making those. You know, it's just really short podcasts, about like less than 10 minutes long for each podcast, like Bible-based teaching that just kind of talks about a life lesson that applies to like a common situation of life that many people encounter, that many people experience. In fact, I actually have it on Apple Podcasts. It's called Divine Intervention Life Lessons. So thank you for listening to me. I will see you in the next podcast. God bless you. Have a wonderful day. Thank you.